Capitol Report is a production of Senate Media Services.
This week, lawmakers talk about the bills legalizing recreational cannabis and creating online driver education courses. Plus, Governors Dayton and Pawlenty speak up for the Hughes Medical School and a voting rights expansion becomes law. Stay tuned for this and more on this week's Capitol Report. Welcome to this week's program. I'm Shannon Lurkey. Governor Tim Walz signed into law a bill that expands voting rights in Minnesota. The new law restores the right to vote to those who have been convicted of felonies once their term of incarceration has been completed.
We're a country of second chances. We're a country of welcoming folks back in. And the idea of not allowing those voices to have a say in the very governing of the communities they live in is simply unacceptable.
After folks have served their time, continuing to put up barriers to their involvement in our democracy does not make us stronger, does not make our communities better. In fact, the right to vote for people who represent them is one way to ensure people can get and stay connected to their communities after incarceration.
Now, I'll tell you, I grew up on the south side of Chicago. I often tell people I'm just a poor kid from Inglewood. My grandfather was born in the Deep South in Mississippi, in a town less than 2,000. I used to visit mostly every summer. And it felt like home. It almost felt like the tribe because everybody knew who you were. It was like a village. And when we got this done, I called my grandfather, who's in his mid-80s now. And I said, we did it. I said, we have given people their access back to the franchise. And he said, great job. And then he talked about, now, this is a man who was born before the Civil Rights Act, before the Voting Rights Act. And he began to think about it, and he said, you know, I remember that growing up, my life was better than my grandfather. I said, well, your grandfather was alive when it was legal to own people, to own black people. But he talked about his life being better for his generation. And he said, well, you're working on, and what I worked on when I was growing up and well, I left Mississippi and went to Chicago, you're working on things that are going to make the next generation lives better.
I know that when I'm at doors and when I'm talking to people, I often use this saying. I say, bad officials are elected when good people don't vote.
Amen.
But now, for me to say that in the context of this room is extra special. Because they will have the right to vote.
Amen.
This is not some act of charity. This is good for everybody in our community because we know that people who feel invested in their community, who feel a stake, who feel a connection to their government, they are far less likely to reoffend.
A bill that would legalize the use of cannabis by adults, create a regulatory framework for cannabis products, test products, expunge cannabis-related convictions for nonviolent offenses, and much more is moving through both the House and the Senate. Senator Lindsey Port is the chief author of the bill in the Senate, and she now joins me in the studio. Welcome.
Thanks so much, Shannon.
Why is now the right time for Minnesota to legalize cannabis use for adults?
Prohibition of cannabis is a failed system. It hasn't worked, and it's done incredible harm to our communities. We're starting to see across the country a switch in legalization of cannabis, in attitudes around cannabis, and Minnesota has been moving in that direction with the legalization of the low-dose hemp THC products last year, really showed that we have a Minnesota market that's ready for this.
This would be a major societal change. Some Minnesotans, my age and older, will remember the educational efforts of the past to discourage people from using drugs. And you kind of have already touched on this, but how have conceptions about cannabis use in particular changed?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm a child of the DARE generation, so this is very real in my own life. I think societally, attitudes have changed a lot. People have now sort of found different paths into a cannabis understanding, certainly with the growth of edibles, I think has massively changed across the country sort of attitudes. It's no longer, just smoking a joint in a way that maybe you would have pictured in the past, but it's in low-dose gummy forms that help you sleep. It's in, in an edible form or a drink, a THC beverage, in ways that people see fitting in their everyday lives. I really think we've also come to an understanding as a country that the war on drugs has not been successful. And we've paid incredible prices for that war on drugs, and it hasn't offered a benefit to our country. And so I think that has really helped participate in that change of attitude.
The federal government still classifies cannabis as a Schedule I controlled substance. What are the implications of legalizing it in Minnesota when it does remain illegal at the federal level?
Yeah, this is a complicated question, but we're working really closely with other states who've gone through this as well. We also are in conversations with our federal partners who are talking about moving that classification down at least a level, which would help. But one of the biggest things is, we cannot cross state lines. Like, that will be a big part of it, is it will be illegal to move it across state lines. So we are doing the best we can to make sure that we have a market that is grown in Minnesota, that is sold in Minnesota, that is run by Minnesotans, that can actually meet the needs of the market. Because I think the thing that we've learned the most from other states is when you don't have a legal market that meets the needs, you really have an opportunity for an illicit market, which is much more dangerous. And we are trying to do everything we can to make sure that we meet the needs of the legal market.
There's been some debate over the proper age for when cannabis use should be legal. I think the bill says 21, but there have been proponents that think it should be 25 because the brain is still developing. Where do you come down on that question?
Yeah, this is a question we've had a lot of discussion on. And in fact, I've worked a lot with the doctors in my caucus, particularly with Dr. Elise Mann on this, who's really seen some of these harms in the ER that she works in. And we really came down at the end of the day that the best thing that we can do is educate folks on the risks of consuming cannabis before you're 25, really on the risks of consuming cannabis in general, the impairment levels. This gets into the arguments of safe driving and things like that. Education is the number one preventer of increases in adverse effects of using cannabis. So that is a big part that we wrote into the bill. The other piece I come down on is, as a society, we have decided that at 21 you are an adult. And the best thing that we can do is provide the information, provide the education, but at that point, Minnesotans need to make the decision that's right for them.
I've heard you testify on many occasions about how this bill will promote equity on multiple levels. First, why is it important to expunge nonviolent cannabis-related criminal records from the past, and how many people will have their records then cleared up? How will that benefit?
Absolutely. This is a huge part of the bill and probably the reason that I agreed to take it on. The prohibition of cannabis just has not provided positive impacts to our society, and it has been incredibly detrimental, particularly to communities of color. Black Minnesotans and white Minnesotans use cannabis at a roughly equal rate. Yet Black Minnesotans are criminalized for it, prosecuted for it, and have records for it at more than four times the amount of white Minnesotans. It is a racial justice issue, and that the cost of that has been borne by communities of color. So it is critical that we undo some of that harm, and that's where the expungements come in. With the current language as it is, that first level of expungement, which is for the misdemeanors, the gross misdemeanors, the nonviolent possession, sort of that kind of thing, that will be automatically expunged, will affect over 50,000 Minnesotans right away. Then there's a longer process for those who have felony convictions that a board will have to look at and decide if they need to be reclassified as a lower conviction, if they can be expunged entirely. There's not a button we can hit to go through those. It has to be done sort of person by person. And so we don't know what that amount will be.
Okay. Secondly, there will be grants and loan programs for training and startup assistance for the products and businesses that are expected to result from the legalization of cannabis. How will it be possible to channel that funding to those communities that have been harmed historically by the prohibition? And how can you ensure that there is an appetite in those communities to move in this direction?
Well, there's definitely an appetite. I can tell you that right away. We're already hearing from folks in these communities who know that really, because of the way their communities have been over-policed for things like cannabis, and people have been criminalized for them, which has, you know, stopped them from getting jobs, from moving into new housing, things like that, there's really been a loss of intergenerational wealth because of the criminalization of drugs. And so there is already an appetite that they are talking about. They really want to get into this industry that has harmed their communities so much, to make sure that they can build that intergenerational wealth, that they can build businesses that they are proud of that are built here in Minnesota, right in their neighborhoods. So I'm not at all concerned about the appetite. The making sure that those grants and loans actually go to the communities is a part we're working really hard on. There is a social equity application that has different criteria. You have to be from an area that has had a certain significant impact from prohibition. There's a number of criteria that have to be met. And that process will not happen overnight. Those applications will take time to process, which is part of the reason that we know we have a little bit of a longer runway once we pass this bill before actual legalization happens, is because we want to get that piece right.
And finally, how much money will legalization bring into the state coffers? How will it be taxed, and what will those dollars be used for? Will it be a windfall for the state or not?
It will not. We really have thought very, very hard about this. And currently in the bill, the tax rate is 8%, which, based on our estimates of use in the market, is what it would take to run this program, to run the licensing, the regulation, the testing, all of that, the education pieces, public service announcements, things like that. That's what it's going to take to run those programs. We don't see cannabis legalization and high taxing of it as a way to pay for everything else in the state. In states that have gone really high for taxing, what we've seen is the legal product is very expensive, and it allows for an illicit market to continue, which an illicit market is much more likely to sell to underage users. It's not tested, it's not safe. So we really want to keep that tax rate down, make sure it pays for the program, but that's the extent of it.
Senator Lindsey Port, I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Shannon.
The potential merger between South Dakota's Sanford Health System and Minnesota's Fairview Health Services has implications for the University of Minnesota Medical Center. Former Governors Mark Dayton and Tim Pawlenty offered their perspectives.
The prospect that governance of the University of Minnesota's Academic Health Center could shift to a South Dakota-based enterprise is alarming and should never be allowed to happen. Hopefully, the statements by the principals yesterday constitute firm commitments to transfer the university's medical assets back from Fairview. If not, a proposed merger between Fairview and Sanford should be prohibited. As a land-grant institution, the University of Minnesota and all of its assets are obligated, both legally and morally, to be used for the benefit of our state and our citizens. They should be solely governed, directed, and funded by its Board of Regents and this legislature.
Minnesota punches above its weight for a variety of reasons. One of those reasons is that Minnesota is a national and global center for healthcare excellence and innovation, and also the quality of care that is distributed and available across our great state. Our healthcare system and the quality of healthcare in the state of Minnesota is undeniably one of the most important strategic assets that we have, and it helps Minnesotans greatly. And Minnesota's strategic advantage in that regard doesn't exist. It does not exist without the historic and current role of the University of Minnesota's academic health centers, more broadly known as the University of Minnesota Medical Center platform.
A variance due to the pandemic that allowed driver education to be offered in an online environment is set to expire in August. Senator John Jasinski is author of a bill that would allow online driver education courses in Minnesota going forward. He joins me now to talk more about this and also to provide his views on the cannabis legalization bill that is moving through the legislature. Thank you for joining me.
You betcha.
You told the Senate Transportation Committee that 23 other states allow for self-paced online driver education courses. Your bill, Senate File 362, has bipartisan support and would add Minnesota to the list. What are the benefits?
You know, I think it's self-paced is one big thing. You know, today in our schedules, you know, hockey or basketball or you're going here or work or things like that, it just allows a self-paced course that allows our kids an opportunity or an option. It's not doesn't have to be that way. It's just an option to do that. And with how busy we are and things like that and getting to appointments, and it just makes it much more accessible. And I think it makes it much more easy for our kids in Minnesota to learn.
There are two kinds of online course offerings. There's synchronous, and that's what is currently available. In full disclosure, that's how my 15-year-old went through his driver education course. But you are proposing asynchronous, which means that it is not a live course at a specific time, but rather it's self-directed with 24-hour support for questions as someone is going through the curriculum. What are the benefits of this approach?
Well, again, it's flexible. So if your schedule's right, it's mostly the scheduling thing. And then some people don't actually learn as fast as others. So when you're, you know, having an instructor and you're going back and forth, some people can't keep up with that, or they just don't have the attention span. So a self-paced has been proven in many, many other ways. We do it for snowmobile safety. It's actually, you can get your pilot's license done that way through online and things like that. So I think it just gives another option. And again, I think both are good, and actually offering both methods are probably a great way to do it, because some people just learn at a different speed, and some people can pay attention differently online versus having an instructor or someone going back and forth. So I think actually both systems have a great option for people to do that either way.
Yeah, and I will say from my own personal experience, because my son's was, you know, Monday through Friday for this 3-hour window for 2 weeks, you know, we had to really schedule around that, and for him to be able to dial in whenever he needed to could have been more helpful. So about what is currently available, Senator Heather Gustafson has that bill for the live online courses. Do you think that one is better than another, or would you just like to see all three options available so that each family, so in the classroom, asynchronous or synchronous, each family can decide what fits their situation best?
I think all three are a great option. Again, as I said, you know, many people learn at different speeds, have different issues going on, different schedules. So allowing those options and the person to choose which way, I think it provides the most flexibility for all our Minnesotans. And I think we can do all three. I think both these bills are coming up, have bipartisan support. So it should, all three should be great options for everybody.
Now, but if nothing is done, then this variance will expire, and then it will be classroom instruction only.
And that would be unfortunate, because again, with what's happening in technology, how it's come along, I think it makes a lot of sense to do it this way. Many, many other states do it, as I mentioned before, and many other types of licenses and permits are done this way. So it just makes a lot of sense for Minnesota.
Is there going to be a way to ensure the quality of a curriculum? Will there be, you know, people just making sure that the kids are learning, and adults too, a lot of people take driver's ed, are learning what they need to know in this course.
Yep, and DVS will oversee these and approve these courses, and there is, I think there's one full-time person that's in the bill that would oversee to make sure everything gets done right and they're abiding by what they're supposed to do, and so yeah, there is a person to oversee it to make sure that it is working well. And I think, and I don't recall because it's been a while since I introduced this, but there's some looking back to make sure things are working well, and like a one-year review to make sure things are proceeding as they should, and we're seeing good results.
And do you expect all three to cost about the same, or would one maybe be less expensive than another?
You know, I think up front, my bill may be a little more expensive to develop the software, and then once you get it there, but the other one ongoing with staffing may be a little bit more. But, you know, our bill also has a person 24 hours that can be there for questions, but, you know, that could be for other states as well. It could be an online, you know, that could handle both areas, whereas the other one could be just directed just to Minnesota. So I would think they'd be pretty close. There may be some differences between the two, but I would say they're pretty much the same.
Okay, so I think we're done with that one. Let's move on to Senate File 73, the bill that would legalize adult use of cannabis. You're the ranking Republican member of the Senate Transportation Committee, and you've voiced a number of concerns about this bill that's moving through the legislature. It would legalize adult use cannabis in Minnesota, create a regulatory framework for new products. It would do some other things as well. What is your number one concern?
Well, I think public safety is a big concern in this. Safety on they keep saying on safety on the roads is a huge thing. I think that's going to be an issue. So I'm concerned about that. The testing is another thing. There's not a really good way to test right now. We're a little bit ahead of the schedule, so I think that's an issue. Workforce issues are going to be another issue, is, you know, with people working and how that affects they get tested positive or negatively and those things. It's pushing more and more costs on our local agencies, and I brought up, and I've gotten some fun things about it, but, you know, local law enforcement dogs that now will not be able to use, and there's a lot of those local agencies have spent a lot of money getting those dogs trained.
So you mean like drug-sniffing dogs?
Drug-sniffing dogs and okay. Things like that, so those will have to be retrained, and some retired and things like that. So I know that was a big thing. It's a very small issue, but it's one of the things that you look at, because a lot of local law enforcement agencies have spent a lot of money for these dogs to get them up and trained and things like that, so that's one thing. I think the other, my big concern is just the more accessible to our kids and more acceptable. And I think that's a concern. You know, I've traveled the state for bonding bills and things like that. We hear a big issue about mental health. And I don't think legalizing marijuana is going to improve the mental health around the state. That's one of my big concerns. But I think just the, you know, the accessibility to our kids and the acceptability of what it is my concern.
So many people, including former Governor Jesse Ventura, make the argument that cannabis is no more damaging than alcohol, and alcohol is, of course, legal. 21 states have legalized recreational use of cannabis, and despite it being illegal in Minnesota, people do continue to use it. Is legalization inevitable, and are there any changes that could be made to the bill that would garner your support?
Well, I think it is going that way. Obviously, it's trending that way, so it probably happened. Again, I'm concerned about the testing, what it's going to do, and I don't think we have a good...
And you mean for law enforcement to be able to test a driver to, you
correct.
Know, because we know how to test for alcohol, but there's no way to test for if somebody's under the influence of cannabis?
There is. They do some sobriety tests, but there are some testing, but they're called DREs. I can't remember the exact specific, but it's a different way to evaluate, drug evaluator, I think. So they have to train more people to understand if they are under the influence or not. And then, you know, what became legal a year ago was the gummies that we're seeing, the 5 milligram gummies. And a lot of people now are using those for sleep. To help them sleep, they'll do that. So if they're taking one every night and it's in their system and they go to work and get tested and that shows, you know, if they get pulled over and that positive is in there but they actually weren't under the influence when they got pulled over, does that still show up? There's just a lot of unanswered questions on the testing side. I haven't talked to one law enforcement official in the state that thinks this is going to benefit Minnesota. Everyone you talk to has some huge concerns of local issues and things like that and the testing. So, and the safety on our roads, I think we've seen that. And just, you know, the people I've talked to, I haven't been to Colorado or Washington, but I've heard people that have visited there and just said it's just they don't feel a good feel when they go there. They see more homeless people on the streets and things like that, so that's a concern. There's just a whole host of issues. I just, you know, and I've listened to both sides. I really have, and a lot of people are either way. And so I've tried to listen to both sides, but I just think overall, I just don't think it's good for Minnesota. I think we want to wait a little bit longer, see what's going on in other states, having better testing to make sure that's doing that, and looking out for our local law enforcement officials to get some input from them. And when we had them testify at we didn't get a lot of input from them. There wasn't a lot of time given to our local law enforcement to talk about the pros and the cons and what's going on. So I just think we should wait a little bit, and you know, we'll see what happens this year.
Senator John Jasinski, thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Prior prior to the passage of a $2 billion bonding bill in the House. Senate Republican leaders laid out their position on what it would take to garner the necessary GOP votes in the Senate.
We want to make sure that that bonding bill gets through. However, we do have a concern, and that's for Minnesotans getting the tax cut that they deserve, making sure that the surplus comes back to them. So as the House continues to debate, starting at 3 o'clock, the bonding bill, we just want them to know that that bill is going to be dead on arrival, because we believe that we need to see some tax cuts tied to that.
How can we, in good conscience, go back to the taxpayers of Minnesota and say, oh, yeah, we have this historic surplus, almost $18 billion, but we're going to put almost $2 billion on a credit card and not give you a penny of your hard-earned dollars back? That just doesn't make sense to me. I think it's a waste of time for the House to take this up today and send it on over to the Senate, because it will be dead on arrival without any tax cuts.
We all recognize that there is a need for a bonding bill, but if you're going to leave the tax bill, wait till the end of session. Now what are you looking at? You're looking at a proposed increase, what, $11 billion in the budget? How much of that surplus is going to be left by the end of session? So I think that's one of the reasons we want to see tax cuts for the citizens of Minnesota front and center.
DFLers promoted the creation of a fund to help communities capture federal dollars for clean energy projects.
Proud to announce an agreement to push forward legislation at $115 million for the Department of Commerce State Competitiveness Fund. Those of you that have been following this know that this will be a transformational amount of money to provide competitive matching grants for the IIJA and IRA legislation that came out of Washington, D.C. We think this will serve Minnesota cities, counties, utilities, nonprofits, and other organizations that are eligible to participate in the roughly two dozen IIJA and IRA grant opportunities.
So it's estimated that for every dollar that we have within the State Competitiveness Fund, it can bring $7 to $8 back to Minnesota. And so with our $100 million matching fund investment, we can leverage as close to $750 million to come back in needed investments in Minnesota.
As we transition to a clean energy economy, Minnesota can't afford to miss an opportunity to leverage federal dollars available. I'm excited about this proposal because it's going to create good pay jobs, accelerate a path to a clean energy future, and make Minnesota competitive with other states.
And Republican lawmakers promoted a bipartisan bill to repeal the minimum markup on gasoline.
There is a law on our books that research shows keeps the price of gas artificially high here in Minnesota. In fact, in Minnesota, it is against the law to sell gas too cheaply. You heard that right. Let me repeat that again. Gas retailers face legal action from the Department of Commerce if they sell gas too cheaply. That's because our current Minnesota law requires that gas retailers charge an 8-cent markup per gallon of gas. This is called the minimum markup. What that means is that selling below this 8-cent markup is against the law and could subject the gas station owner to civil and criminal penalties.
This is an issue of economic justice for working class Minnesotans. The minimum markup law does not apply to club stores like Costco or Sam's Club. And so if you're able to afford a Costco membership and shop there, you can get your gas, it can be 20 cents per gallon cheaper or sometimes more to purchase your gas. And we just want to make sure that all Minnesotans have access to buying cheaper gas.
Join us again next week as we delve into more topics affecting Minnesotans. I'm Shannon Lurkey, and on behalf of all of us at Senate Media Services, thanks for watching. We'll be right back.